It's early morning in the Govanpuri slums in the south of Delhi. People are waking up, washing, having breakfast, getting ready for the day. One billion people live in slums. Slums have a strong visual identity. We're used to seeing footage of densely packed, ramshackle homes squeezed onto strips of land in inner cities. But how do slums sound? And how do the people who live in slums experience those soundscapes? I'm Dr. Tom Rice, a sound anthropologist, and I'm fascinated by the way that the sounds of a place can often tell us a great deal about the lives of the people who live there. The Govanpuri slums occupy a fairly small area, roughly equivalent to three city blocks, and they have a huge population of about 50,000 people. But perhaps the only way you can really understand what the place is like is through a direct sensory experience, like sound. In this programme for the BBC World Service, local residents lead us through the Govanpuri slums. We listen to the settlement through their ears as they explain how music, sound and noise are part of the fabric of their daily social and emotional lives. But we also learn how objections to the slum and its soundscape are at the heart of a move to demolish the settlement and displace its noisy residents.
If the slums are removed, how much percentage-wise do you think the real estate value over here will increase?
It will shoot up.
Like shoot up by 15, 20, 30%?
30% at least, oh yes.
We'll think too about how the slum soundscape reflects the way that India is changing. So come with me on an ear-led journey into the extraordinary sonic space that is the Govanpuri slums. The slum is a maze of alleyways and tightly packed brick houses. Strangers often get lost inside. But fortunately, we have an expert guide to Govanpuri and its soundscape.
I'm Tripta Chandola. I'm an urban researcher based in Delhi.
I first came to know about Govanpuri through reading her intriguing research. Over the last 10 years, Tripta has developed a unique knowledge of the slum and of the way that sounds express class, gender, and religious differences among the people who live there.
One of the most significant research I've done has been exploring the soundscapes and doing sound research in a slum settlement, Govanpuri. Yeah, it is colloquially referred to as slums of Govanpuri after Govanpuri, the legal settlement area. The slum in itself is a set of three camps, Nehru, Navjeevan and Bhumihin camp. We are standing on the edge of Nehru camp, which is one of the three camps of the slums. This is just a peripheral edge of the slums. One can even draw an analogy with a human body, you know, this just being the skin of the slums. Because as we keep going deeper into the slums, they become more and more denser, they become poorer. And that is quite evident in the construction of the houses, in the drainage. The density of the population increases and the space becomes more and more limited. Somebody's room is another person's passageway.
On the perimeter roads, the sound that dominates is of traffic. But as Tripta leads us into the slum, the soundscape changes. The lanes of the slum are like tunnels. They're very narrow, and the houses rise up two or three stories on either side, sometimes almost meeting overhead. This urban geography has interesting implications for sound. Because you can't see far, there's no overview or vista, sounds become more prominent and noticeable. Also, sound seems to travel quickly and easily down the urban canyons of the slum.
So we are walking down one of the lanes inside Bhumihin camp.
It's very narrow here. It's probably very narrow. Maybe a meter across with open gutters on the sides. And as you can see, there are certain constructions
which totally block the skyline and any light, natural light coming in.
It's true, actually. It's totally dark here, isn't
it?
Yeah. You have to be a bit careful, don't you, where you're stepping here. There's lots of drains and...
lots of sewage, so be careful about it. This lane, you can see that there's hardly any natural light, and the construction has just sort of overlapped. And as we are walking,
welcome to India.
Thank you very much.
There's a lot of activity happening in this really narrow space. People are moving about. There's children playing. We saw some young people playing board games.
That's right. We saw them playing checkers or something.
Yeah, checkers, and women are sat outside and having a conversation, children are playing. So there's a lot that is happening in this rather narrow space over here. When you're walking down these lanes, people will stop you, inquire you, have long conversations, you go into people's houses, and everybody is out there in the lane, so everybody is noticing your movement.
So it's a very sociable space, it's a very chatty space.
Huh, yes. This is a relatively quieter time, but during when the water is being filled or when it's really hot and it's really oppressive to sit inside, there's a power cut, or in the evenings when people have done their household chores, they will sit out, and you know, then it becomes really, really sociable and lively. The two young girls having a little wash next to a water source.
Just a tiny dribble, really.
Yeah, a tiny dribble. Because of the density of the structure, the sound travels rather easily, and the whole sort of feel of the space is very porous. You know, you can sort of hear sound traveling.
The fact that the slum is sonically porous becomes crucially important in the daily ritual of collecting water. Water is a scarce resource in the slum, and drinking water has to be collected from one of the hand pumps dotted round the camps and then carried home. But water for washing is piped right into the narrow lanes for a short period each morning and evening. Most people have dug little holes or pits in front of their houses, and when the water arrives, it fills those pits up. People then rush to scoop the water out and pour it into plastic containers. Missing the opportunity to collect water could create serious problems for each household. So when the water does arrive, the word goes out. Here's Situ, a young mother who lives in the slum. I was surprised to hear her speaking such excellent English. It gave me a new perspective on the education and income levels of some slum residents. Situ has a good job at a company that supplies products to shops in the UK.
The biggest sound is here, like, pani aa gaya, like water comes.
Water comes.
People announce water comes. Rush and just fill your buckets and tubs, because it's just a routine in each and every day, in a morning to evening. They give a 2 hours water in a morning and 2 hours in a evening. So lots of people here who wants to fill their water in tubs, bucket and other. So that is why they shout, okay, water comes, please fill it and store it at your place. So this is the first sound we heard in the morning, I think.
Because it's so important not to miss the water, each day people wait expectantly in the alleyways for it to arrive. When it does, they swing into action.
Water does not come at the same time throughout the camp. So half an hour back, it was in the lane before this. Now it's over here.
I see.
Yeah.
My goodness, probably within a 50-meter stretch of passageway, there's about maybe 20 different families all out with their containers filling up. Amazing. Yeah. This guy next to us, what's he doing?
He's filling water in cans, and he's using bottle which has been cut and using the top of it upside down as a funnel.
And having to move out of the way of people carrying past
jerry cans.
Cans, which they're just lining up all down the alleyway here.
Yeah. In the background you can hear someone calling out saying, get more containers from upstairs. So it's all being sort of sounded out. People are calling out, to saying that water has come, get more containers, I am in the queue. So all of that is happening in the backdrop. Even 15 minutes back, it was one of those quiet afternoons where we were just sat around. And as the water keeps filling, and over the next half an hour, the sort of soundscape keeps getting denser and denser, you know, and people will keep coming out, so conversations will start happening. So it's sort of, the transformation is quite, it's quite dramatic.
Yeah, suddenly the whole place, having been really calm and chatty, is now full of bustle.
Yeah.
And everybody's activity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's bath time for him.
A little very sweet girl in a blue salwar kurta, filling water using a plastic bottle which has been cut into half, and that plastic bottle is only just about the same size as her. Aapka kya naam hai? Neha. Her name is Neha. You can see that it's a very narrow alley, and because the houses are so close, that repeated motion of filling water and emptying it in cans, that creates a rhythm and echoing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. The sound is being channeled down this alleyway, and it's actually really rhythmic, the sound that it's making.
The sound is interspersed by women just having casual banter. For instance, right now, Bitya, she's talking to this really beautiful young girl wearing black, telling her that I'll tell your mother about your flirtations. And the mother is just sat right over there.
Sound travels easily and fluidly through the slum. This means that residents are always within earshot of their neighbours. Here's Situ again. She's the young mother we spoke to earlier.
I told you, it's just a small area. And we can easily listen to each and everybody's conversation because of it's very congested area. One room becomes house here.
Stone, paper, scissors.
There are so many children who are playing in a street and they are shouting. So it's another version of sound you can say here. Like they are playing cricket. Okay, I just put it 6. Catch it.
They're giving a running commentary.
They're giving running commentary. They are doing a running commentary. So it's another version of sound you can say here.
Bhaiya,
thoda
interview do aake tum bhi. Aa idhar aao.
Like two people are fighting in a street, so we are like, okay, it's like routine work, so let it be ignored and do your work. And like sometime I feel when I come to from my office, I feel like headache. See, I need a peace. Yeah. Why they are fighting? And if I am going to stop them, please don't fight. And I am restless, then say, so that's your problem. If you are having a headache, it's not our problem.
So the soundscape is experienced as noisy by some. But noise and noisiness might not always carry the same negative connotations in India as they do in many Western countries.
I'm Shireen Miller, and I'm a long-term resident of Delhi. I think that, noisiness or noise has much more negative connotations in certain Western cultures than it does in India. So it's not seen in that sort of negative way. And in fact, people might see it the reverse, that, you know, one of the things that they might find hard to adjust to is the kind of quietness when you move west, or if you go definitely from India to, say, a country like England. That's one of the things that people find quite hard and are not used to, that sort of almost like a deathly silence. You know, for them, it can be quite depressing. It's kind of seen more as something that is vibrant rather than as a negative thing of it being noisy.
Perhaps the best way to understand the slum soundscape is to consider it in terms of what appears at first hearing to be its opposite, the soundscape of the rainforest. Professor Stephen Felt is also a sound anthropologist. He spent time immersing himself in the sounds of the rainforest in Papua New Guinea. When he moved on to the populous urban soundscapes of Accra, the capital city of Ghana, he was intrigued by the similarities. In both places, sounds become multi-layered and interwoven, creating a real complexity and density of sound.
My anthropology of sound research in Papua New Guinea concerned ways rainforest ecology relates to poetry and song. In the Bosavi region, I found that people sing with, to, and about rainforest birds and other ambient sounds, from waterways to insects. In the forest, you cannot see far ahead. Sound takes over from vision as the indicator of height and depth, as sounds overlap, alternate, and interlock. After living in and recording the Bosavi sound environment for many years, I began to do research in urban West Africa. And there I've experienced the same density of overlapping, alternating, and interlocking sounds from sources variously human, environmental, mechanical, and technological. While it's possible to see much more in the cityscape, the interaction of sound and vision in urban space strikes me as no less dense or multi-layered than in the rainforest.
Although the soundscape of the slum is busy and dense, it is possible to find moments of relative quiet. Tripta took me to a small workshop where a part of the horns for motor vehicles is assembled.
It's a really small room, and there are about five women sat very close to each other, like quite literally back to back, dealing with this little contraption which I'm trying to hold in my hand, and which would be how big?
Maybe 2 centimeters square?
Yeah.
It's a little circuit board, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little circuit board. Because the work is so intricate, it's quite like around us there's so much of bustling happening, but it's pin drop silence.
You can almost hear the concentration.
Yes, yes. Everything that happens, all the activities, they leave a sonic mark, so to say. But over here, yeah, you can hear the silence, you can hear the concentration.
Migrants come to live in Govanpuri from many different areas of India, so there's real linguistic, cultural, and religious diversity in the dense concentration of people in the slum. The presence of different religious communities in particular becomes obvious from the soundscape. Every day, 5 times a day, the azan, the Islamic call to prayer, sounds out across Govanpuri. Mr. Gupta and his son Arun live very close to a speaker from which the azan is broadcast. For them, the noise is becoming a problem.
So they're talking about this, the azan becoming, like, you know, becoming a really sort of annoying noise in the morning. That has happened in the last few years since the two mosques have become really big. Both the mosques amongst themselves wanted to sort of have their presence felt. So they both were sort of having a sonic war about who can play it louder. And both the sounds would conflict.
We can't report of it.
Yeah.
It's just something they have to put up with.
Yeah.
It's quite loud, the azan here,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. From where we are, the mosque is really close by, just about 25-30 yards, and you can really hear the azan very, very clearly and loudly.
Just a short way away, Shabnam Kala, a Muslim woman, is having the opposite problem. She claims that she can't hear the azan because of her noisy Hindu neighbours.
Some people might want to worship in the morning. For instance, perhaps I've come to read the Holy Quran. Now we're reading the Quran, and they put on their loud music. That's just wrong, isn't it? If we ask them to lower the volume, they say, we're listening to it in our own house. What's it got to do with you? Recently it was Ramadan, and we were fasting. So in the evening it's time to break our fast, and we can't hear the azan, the call to prayer, properly. They turn the volume on their TVs up. They're not bothered about us not being able to hear it. But if we can't hear the call to prayer, we can't break our fast. Now we shout from inside, can you turn it down? Can you turn it down? When they don't listen, then we get really angry. We ask them to turn it down until the azan finishes. After that, they can do what they want.
Religious life is very close to the surface in Govanpuri. This is a devotional song being sung by a group of women in a Hindu temple on the edge of the slums. Some of the women are dancing, swaying back and forth to the music with ecstatic expressions on their faces. One of them is Ashad Fiji.
My कि अंदर से मतलब जैसे मंदिर जाते हैं तो अच्छा फील होता है मतलब एकदम से ऐसा हो जाता जैसे
आई फील वेरी हैप्पी इनसाइड व्हेन आई गो टू द टेंपल आई फील रियली गुड I feel fresh and forget about the tensions at home. I don't like quarrelling in my neighbourhood. What I want is for people to sit together, laugh and say nice things to each other. The sounds in the temple are different. When you listen to songs being sung for the divine, there's something that just moves you and makes you want to dance. So people say he's Muslim, he's Christian, he's Hindu. I believe that though the practices might be different, it's essentially the same thing.
Just a short way away, devotional chants can be heard, drifting out from another temple. And at this roadside shrine, another ritual is in process. These more formal religious ceremonies take place in temples at the edge of the slum. But religious life also goes on in ordinary households, deep inside the slum itself.
So we are in someone's house in Navjeevan camp. It's a small room. There's a group of women and in the middle of the room, there's an idol of... Kaun si bhagwan hai ye?
Ye Sherawali Mata.
Sherawali Mata. Somebody had asked for a wish to this particular goddess and it has come true.
It's a wonderful little occasion because there's like 15 people in a very small room with the... It's so atmospheric because of the confines of the space make the sound very loud.
Yeah.
There's the deity and the smoke and the flame and the incense and it all combines to make an amazing sensory atmosphere.
Yes, and it's a really small space but it's amazing that it can contain so many people and... It's gotten quiet right now, but the moment they start singing, the sort of whole space becomes like doubled, or you know, it's just amazing that sonic effect it has.
I'm Dr. Tom Rice, and you're listening to Govanpuri Sound from the BBC World Service. We've heard how the density and diversity of the slums' population and the extraordinary physical space of the slums create a unique soundscape. By following sounds, we can get a real insight, or perhaps in sound would be a better term, into the character of the place, but also into the lives of the individual people who live there. After the news, we'll hear how the soundscape of the Govanpuri slums connects to the Delhi soundscape more widely. We'll also learn about an emerging threat to the slums that may silence them for good. That's coming up in part two of Govanpuri Sound, after the news.
A richer world from the BBC World Service.
In India, the second most desired object is a television. The first is a fridge.
You've got here a completely pink fridge.
Yeah. Pink is not only the one. We have blue, purple, we have different colors. And more important than that, we have different patterns also.
Here in India, only 30% of people have a fridge, but the figure is growing.
I think we've grown up in an environment where we've always seen everyone we know own a fridge.
It's one of the basic necessities. I mean, you need a fridge.
I'm Anu Anand, and as part of the BBC's A Richer World season, I'll be asking what owning a fridge and the contents in it say about changing wealth, consumption, and lifestyles.
The thing that I like most about my fridge is the freezer.
Join me for the debate, Fridgenomics, on the BBC World Service. Online at bbcworldservice.com/richerworld.
I'm Dr. Tom Rice. In the second part of Govanpuri Sound on the BBC World Service, we'll explore how the soundscape of the Govanpuri slums in South Delhi resonates with other aspects of the Delhi soundscape. But we'll also learn how objections to noise from the slum feed into a wider drive to get the settlement demolished. We'll ask what the future holds for the Govanpuri slums and its unique sound environment. That's the second part of Govanpuri Sound, coming up after the news.
BBC News with Natalia Ralston.
The Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis has given more details about how his government intends to tackle its debt crisis. Speaking after talks in Paris with his French counterpart, Michel Sapin, Mr. Varoufakis said repayments could be tied to Greece's ability to restore growth. Mr. Sapin said France would help Greece, but there was no question of cancelling the Greek debt. Egypt has freed and deported the Al Jazeera journalist Peter Gresta, who was convicted of colluding with the Muslim Brotherhood. Al Jazeera has demanded the release of his two jailed colleagues. American corporations could face a one-off tax on billions of dollars of foreign earnings under new budget proposals from the White House. President Obama also wants to introduce an annual tax on all companies' foreign income. King Abdullah of Jordan has condemned the killing of the Japanese journalist Kenji Goto by Islamic State militants and said every effort is being made to free a Jordanian pilot being held by the group. Jordanian officials said they were trying to establish whether the pilot was still alive. The battle between Ukrainian forces and Russian-backed rebels for the eastern town of Debaltseve appears to be intensifying. People there say shelling is almost constant. The Nigerian army says it has repelled an attack by Boko Haram militants on the strategic northeastern city of Maiduguri. A military spokesman said they'd inflicted massive casualties and captured guns, ammunition and vehicles from the militants. But a member of a local vigilante force told the BBC the army had retreated. Ghana have qualified for the semi-finals of the Africa Cup of Nations for the fifth consecutive tournament. They beat Guinea 3-0 and will now take on the hosts Equatorial Guinea for a place in the final. In the day's other quarter-final, Ivory Coast are playing Algeria. BBC News.
Welcome back to Govanpuri Sound. I'm Dr. Tom Rice, an anthropologist with a special interest in sound and the roles it plays in different cultural settings. In this programme for the BBC World Service, we're finding out what sounds can tell us about life in the Govanpuri slums, a large illegal settlement in South Delhi. In the first part of the programme, we listened closely to the slum itself. And in this part, we'll hear how the sounds of the slum connect to the wider soundscape of Delhi. One sound you often hear in the Govanpuri slums is the cry of hawkers, people who walk the streets selling anything from pearl strings to pressure cooker whistles. This hawker was selling hairbands and bits of plastic jewellery. Artist Rashmi Kalika has made a collection of the hawker cries she hears in the area of South Delhi where she lives. She's woven them into an extraordinary composition.
Hawker Cry project really started. I moved from England sometime in 1998 and I kept hearing these sounds in South Delhi, hawkers' cries, but I felt that no artist was attempting to even record these, and I was just wondering why, because there's extraordinary sounds in the morning. And when I did make inquiries from other people, say, yeah, we hear them, we grew up with these sounds, so I realised it's an integral part of India. Traders do move around from colony to colony and they just hawk. And all different hawkers have different sounds that they throw over walls, buildings, you know, so people do come and buy their wares. Every morning I would stand at a particular spot and then buy their wares. And then I would say, do you mind if I take a recording? Normally they would oblige. And I did manage to record in the region of about 2,000 voices. I just suddenly felt akin to the sounds. Every sound sounds so different every single day. I may not ever see that hawker again. So people say, oh, why are you archiving these voices? In fact, I never really started out by saying I'm going to be archiving them. I was thinking primarily of sound as a form of sculpture, I would say, sculptural dimensions it has, and how would I be able to use it as a sound work? Sound worked as a piece of artwork. They don't think themselves they have a skill, because for them it's a living. They have to sound in a particular way. And if Madame on third floor can't hear them, then she's not going to be able to buy their wares. So they do all sound different, and they do compete. I keep going back to the malawalas, the people who kind of do the jewellery repair work and the stringing of beads. They all sound the same. And I did wonder at one point, do they really come from the same family? So sometimes sounds are adopted, like malawala, malawala. So even if there's a different pitch, it's malawala. So these actually do vary, but they are the same kind of rhythm. There's the same rhythm to it, but the pitches may vary, yes. And even the pressure cooker wala, you'll sound like pressure cooker. So they tone it in such a way that it always has the same tune to it. But of course the voices are different. There's no need now to get somebody who's going to come and string your pearls, or somebody who's going to do your grinding of what you use in the kitchen, or cleaning your pots, or getting your pressure cooker whistle repaired, because these things are not needed anymore. It's a consumer society. People are going to dispose their things and encourage to buy new things. So these people will disappear eventually. And they are disappearing. In fact, I don't see some of the people I used to see.
The rhythmic and melodic features of these calls are really remarkable. Of course, India is a country with strong traditions of vocal performance. In the Govanpuri slums, I often found people preferred to sing rather than be interviewed.
This is a very super hit song of in India. People used to play this song in weddings. It's a very famous song in India.
While the older women might be happy to sing folk songs, the younger generation want to rap. Not far away from Govanpuri is another slum, home to two rising stars of the rap world. Asta Chauhan arranged for me to meet them. The rendezvous was an abandoned 14th century mosque.
This is a really amazing spot. It's a huge space, about 150 metres all round. What seems like a huge number of arches creating amazing play of light and shadow. And you can hear, and it smells very pungently, of bats. There's a large colony of bats here. The floor is covered in bat dung. But it's a really eerie, extraordinary atmospheric space. I'm just looking now down a corridor of arches. It really is otherworldly and creates a sense of being, well, of having taken a big step back in time. Asta? Asta?
My name is Asta Chauhan. I'm an artist and I've been in Delhi since 2002 and have worked in this neighborhood of Khidki since 2004. We're right now at the Khidki Mosque in the Khidki village in Malviya Nagar in South Delhi. And this is a 14th century mosque. It's currently not in use. Once in a while, you'll see people gambling or having a drink or a smoke here. But that's it. It's really beautiful.
The rappers I came to meet call themselves slum gods, a clever play on the derogatory term slum dogs, which entered common parlance after the film Slumdog Millionaire. So how do they feel about being labelled as slum dwellers?
Is that good? It makes us more popular. Don't say anything negative about the slum and it's cool because they hold it with pride. Yeah.
Slum gods were proud of saying, Izzat denge, izzat dega, to izzat milegi.
If you respect us, we respect you.
Like a lot of teenagers, slum gods are fairly monosyllabic in conversation, but they're quite the opposite when it comes to performing their music. Using their mobile phones to play an MP3 of beats and backing vocals, they gave me this live rendition of one of their raps.
आती अक्सर तेरी याद मुझको रुलाती है बड़ा तड़पाती है छोटी छोटी बात वो सारी याद आती है याद है वो दिन हाँ याद है वो दिन मिले थे पहली बार हाँ मिले थे पहली बार उस खास के पास वो दिन था खास थोड़ी सी बात किसी तूने मुझे मुझे नहीं पता मेरा नंबर मांगा किसे आई ये चली गई हंसी मुझे दे गई.
It's not all about producing new sounds. Some people want to control existing ones. As we heard in the first part of the programme, the honking of car horns may not reach the very heart of the Govanpuri slums. The lanes are too narrow for cars to go there. But anywhere near the edges of the slums and on across huge swathes of Delhi, honking dominates the soundscape. One person who thinks honking has gone too far is Ravi Kalra. I went to meet him.
My name is Ravi Kalra and I'm originally from Delhi, born and brought up here. I'm very concerned because people blow horn unnecessarily too much while driving. The 70% noise pollution in our metropolitan cities in India is through unnecessarily vehicular honking. And my activities in past made me travel to somewhere 42 different nations. Whenever in any civilized country I've been, I never saw honking being misused. Over there, the definition of horn is that it is meant for emergency. But in our country, the definition of horn is completely vanished. We use horn like a baby rattle. So I decided to start the battle in 2008. To educate everyone not to blow horn so that we can make our country a better place for better living.
What did your campaigning involve?
I decided to make slogans and these are called Do Not Honk slogans. I wrote two different slogans. One says Do Not Honk and other says that even dog never bark unnecessarily. So these were the two campaigns I started in that. Look at the air traffic. So my teams, myself, often we are on roads, we stop traffic and speak to the drivers and try to convince them that do not horn unnecessarily. And we have these special stickers made by my own savings and we take permission and paste on the back bumper of their car so that the message keep floating.
What would you say to somebody who said, well, the honking is a really distinctive part of India and it would be a real shame if people were to stop honking? It would be a loss of the auditory culture.
I believe it is a very wrong statement and our country is getting harmed due to that. We get headache, the blood pressure goes very high, so it has health effects also. So I strongly believe that anybody who says that honking is very important, then I think they are abusing and they are not the nation's soldiers.
For a different perspective, I hailed an auto rickshaw and whizzed back towards Govanpur to meet Dr. Tripta Chandala, an urban researcher who we met in the first half of the programme. She's been doing research on the slums of Govanpuri for more than a decade and is an expert on its soundscape. But where are we going? So, Tripta, you brought me to a horn repair specialist.
Yes. And, yeah, it is on the sort of edge of Govanpuri and it's a really quaint shop. and he has a really big board. The board is almost bigger than the shop itself. It says the name of the shop, which is Amjad Horn Repairing, and that over here all kinds of horn can be repaired, and new horns of a certain company Jalwa are available over here. So now we are going to talk to the man himself.
I just ought to say that it's a great location for a horn shop. He's right beside the main road.
Yes, yeah.
And there'll be a lot of horns in the background.
My name is Mohammed Hussein. I've been working with horns for 40 years. First, I used to work as a maintenance man at the Jalwa Horn Company. After that, I worked as a horn repairman. People used to use the horn less. Now they use it more. People honk more nowadays. Of course, if you honk too often, the life of the horn gets reduced. In the past, people had musical horns, dog horns, even sirens. Now the police have banned them. A horn is definitely a necessity, especially in Delhi. If you don't honk, pedestrians won't listen. Unless you honk very close to them, they won't move. It applies to motorcyclists as well. They put headphones in their ears and continue riding. If someone comes up behind them, they can't hear. So the horn is certainly a necessity in Delhi. Maybe less so outside Delhi.
He is going to give us a demonstration of a horn which is really, really, really loud.
Thank you very much. We'll leave you in noise.
Back in the Govanpuri slums, noise is one of the things upsetting the neighbours. There are several middle-class apartment blocks right alongside the slums, with just a wall separating them. Tripta explains.
People living on this side of the apartment block, the rate of these apartments would be at least 10-15% lesser than other apartments in the block, because they are overlooking the slums. And it's not only the noise, you know, it's the, they talk about the smell, and indeed there is a very powerful
smell. There is a powerful smell in the air. Yeah.
There is a powerful smell because the garbage dump is in the open.
You can imagine the people who live in that block must be a little bit unhappy about that.
They are very unhappy about it. Not a little bit, they're very unhappy about it. They can control the sight, they can just shut their windows, but how do they control the sounds and the smell?
We spoke to some of the residents of the middle-class apartment blocks.
This, our area is surrounded by the jogi dwellers.
Slum dwellers.
Slum dwellers.
Yeah.
And the sound pollution is too high. The level of sound is too high here. Sound contributes to many ills, headaches and other things.
Can you identify a few sounds coming from the slums which you think of as problems?
Yeah, say after sunset. Most of the people go for drinks. They overdrink and create nuisance, fight and abuse each other. And sometimes the fights are at a high pitch.
So you can hear them?
Yeah.
Do you want the slums to be removed?
Sure.
The bad smell is coming and people are watching you badly and all. It's very, very loud, very noisy. Because they are the small people, they're shouting, they're playing music loud at night.
And where you live is very different.
It's very different. It's very, very quiet. People, you know, behave properly.
इनके यहाँ function आधी आधी रात तक होते हैं. बच्चे पढ़ते हैं. तो
they have their functions till late at night, but our children have to study. They have speakers that make loud noise and disturb the children when they're studying. We have to go and ask them to turn it down. Sometimes we have to report it to the police. They make dirty noises, dirty swearing. They fight between themselves. I don't like that at all, so I come inside my house and close the doors. The children are studying, and on a daily basis you can hear noises from loudspeakers in the slum. If someone is ill, if the children are studying, or if they have exams, the people in the slums don't care. This is the problem we have.
This last woman mentions the slum dwellers having noisy functions till late at night. During my stay, one of these functions, or jagrans, happened to take place, and Tripta and I went along. As you can hear, it was indeed very noisy. Delhi is a bursting modern city. Property prices are soaring, and apartment blocks seem to be springing up on every available patch of land. In aspirational modern India, competition for space and the control of space is intense and extends even into the realm of sound. In fact, objections to the soundscape of the Govanpuri slums are at the heart of a move by middle-class residents to get the settlement demolished, displacing what they see as its noisy occupants. It's easy to imagine that having a park or even other apartment blocks instead of a slum close by would give a huge boost to local property values. For some, there's also a strong sense of entitlement to a middle-class way of life.
If the slums are removed, how much percentage-wise do you think the real estate value over here will increase?
It will shoot up.
Like shoot up by 15, 20, 30%?
30% at least. Oh yes.
When I moved here, I was told that this was all going to get cleared. There was one reason for buying up this apartment, but it has not happened. And it's the first time that I've understood what it is to live close to a slum. It is at times extremely irritating. As a resident, as a citizen, we are entitled to a reasonable, clean surrounding, you know, a middle-class surrounding, and you don't have it, you don't get it. So that kind of gets your goat. You know what I mean?
Have you ever walked right through the middle of the slum here?
No.
Never into the interior?
No. Never had the courage to step into it. I think the smells and the dingy surroundings, I just don't want to perhaps even see it.
Middle-class residents may complain about the noise of the slum, but Tripta and I were struck by the quietness of one particular voice we came across. It belongs to a young woman who has recently worked as a surrogate, and the week before we met her had given birth to twins. Her voice is diminutive, subdued. Although not all women in the slum have quiet voices by any means, she does remind us of the expectation placed on many women in India to be meek and subservient. Her story is also a reminder of the many quiet struggles for survival being fought each day in the Govanpuri slums.
तो ये जब आपने ये सरोगेसी जब ये सरोगेसी का हुआ था तो ये कैसे आपने सोचा
ये मतलब ऐसी सोचा इतना कर्जा ज्यादा था ना
So when surrogacy became a possibility, what did you think about it? I didn't really think. I mean, my husband was in a lot of debt. I thought if I did this, I could pay off the debt. Your husband didn't have an issue with it? No, he didn't have a problem with it. So after the burden that your body went through, the cesarean section, and with the operation you had to undergo, do you think you'll ever become a surrogate again? Never. It was very difficult? Yes, it was very difficult. How many stitches do you have? I don't know, but the mark is really long, right across my stomach. You have 4 kids, right? I have 4. You have just delivered the babies a week back. Will you do something like this again? No, never. Why not? It is very painful, and I have a lot of other difficulties as well. Do you feel sad? Yes, I am very sad, and I can't even walk properly right now. You carried the babies for 9 months, and then you had to give them up. Did you feel bad about that? No, they didn't show me the babies. They didn't even tell me the sex of the child. I was blindfolded during the entire procedure. I even asked the doctor. I asked him to just tell me what was the sex of the child. He responded that it was none of my concern.
So Tripta and I have just been allowed into the grounds of one of the middle-class apartment blocks that's right beside the slum. And the difference in the soundscape is just incredible. It's so peaceful here. You can hear birds, you can hear wind in the trees, something you would never hear in the slum at all. It's just extraordinary.
Yeah, like as when we walk inside the lanes of the slums, there are areas where you don't get any natural light, let alone the wind, let alone the sort of, you know, the natural soundscape, so to say. The contrast is quite amazing.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in a different world, I really do.
Yeah, it is a different world.
It's interesting that all over Delhi, sound, as well as being the object of control, is being used as the means of control. In public places, auditory warnings like this one attempt to impose approved codes of behaviour onto those whose ears they reach. Nowhere is the use of auditory warnings more intensive than in Delhi's new and rapidly expanding metro system.
Agla station, Nehru Place, hai. Yatriyon se anurodh hai ki wo metro train ke darwaze band hote samay avrodh utpan na kare.
Next station is Nehru Place. Passengers are requested not to obstruct the closing of doors. Doing this is a punishable offense. Doors will open on the left. Please mind the gap.
So, Trita, where are we now?
We're in a market complex called the Nehru Place District Market Complex. It was made part of the Delhi Master Plan in mid-60s, and it started coming up in early 70s. One of the reasons why I wanted you to come over here is because right behind the complex, there was this huge bustling slum settlement. It was demolished and it has now been renovated into this huge, well-manicured public park. It would not be unfair to say that the slums of Govindpuri, considering the real estate they are occupying, the prices of it is just increasing, that it might suffer the same fate, that it might just disappear one day to be transformed into a space which would have no mark, no recollection, no history of that there existed anything else but that park. The Govindpuri soundscape is sometimes harsh and raucous. As we've heard, it can express stories that are dark and sad. But the soundscape is also an extraordinarily complex mix of voices and presences. And at times, it holds a really remarkable humanity and warmth. I think that the richness and uniqueness of the Govindpuri soundscape is something we should value. But as Delhi continues to develop, a slum, as Tripta says, can quickly disappear to be replaced by a park, though it might just as easily be a road or a shopping mall. So perhaps, in the end, the sounds of the Govindpuri slums have something else to teach us. The fact that they are fleeting and quickly fade is a reminder that the slums themselves are temporary and transitory too. Govindpuri Sound was produced and presented by me, Dr. Tom Rice. It was a peer production for the BBC World Service.